Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Mahabharata character series. We are discussing about Bhishma and we are right in the middle of the Mahabharata war. We discussed how at the end of the fourth day, Bhishma spoke the glories of Krishna to Duryodhana and how Duryodhana had temporary second thoughts based on contemplating the position of Krishna. But again, he decided to continue his hostilities, yeah? And then the war continued in earnest. So, on the eighth day again, the fortunes of the war went up and down. Sometimes the Pandavas got upper hand, sometimes the Kauravas got upper hand. Bhishma still continued his formidable commandership where he was slowly grinding the Pandava forces. Now, on the eighth day again, there was a fierce fight between Bhima and Duryodhana, and actually Ghatotkacha also came to assist, and several warriors came to assist Duryodhana on the other side. So again Bhima fought so furiously that Duryodhana was wounded. Actually Duryodhana was wounded by Ghatotkacha also first, and Duryodhana was wounded by Bhima also when he later had a fight, and eventually Bhima killed again several of the brothers of Duryodhana right in front of his eyes, and Duryodhana became so angry. It was filled with angry as well as frustration. Anger at the defeat and frustration at the inability to counter the result. And at the end of the war, being scorched by the enemy, burning with the wounds and burning with anger from within, he went to his old friend Karna. And Karna, who had been in the sidelines, he welcomed Duryodhana. He says, "Oh friend, how do you fare in your fortunes? I hope that you are attaining victory." Duryodhana shook his head in exasperation and misery. He said, "No, our forces are being overcome." And he says, "Although Bhishma is at our commandership, still we are slowly being overcome. Today I was also got wounded." Duryodhana felt humiliated to speak about how he had been again bested by Bhima. So Karna immediately spoke. He said, "You know, just let me come in and I will defeat and kill all the Pandavas." Actually, we'll discuss later how Karna had given a vow to Kunti that he would not kill the other Pandavas except Arjuna. But still he just wanted to please Duryodhana. I said, "I'll kill all the Pandavas. Just let me tell Bhishma to step down, then I will come in and I will overcome the Pandavas." Duryodhana became grave. And he said, "Yes, I will talk with the grandsire." And then he went to Bhishma. And Bhishma saw the wounds on Duryodhana immediately. He used mantras and he used herbs. And he started tending to his wounds. And as he was doing this, Duryodhana spoke words which wounded Bhishma far more than the wounds that he had got on that day during the war. So Duryodhana was so self-centered that he couldn't see that Bhishma was serving him on the war field and was serving him right now by tending to his wounds. But he spoke words that pierced like daggers into Bhishma's body. He said, "Oh grandsire, I cannot believe that while you are there as our commander, the Pandavas can overcome our forces." He spoke, he paused and spoke, carefully choosing his words, knowing that what he was going to speak was going to cause great hurt to Bhishma. But he wanted to incite him somehow or the other. He says, "If you are partial to the Pandavas and because of that you are not fighting wholeheartedly, then you should have told me before, and I would not have entrusted you as the commandership of my army. I was a fool that entrusting you as a commander, I have practically ensured that my army will be killed by the Pandavas because you will not counter them wholeheartedly." This charge that Bhishma was partial and was not fighting wholeheartedly stung it stung because first of all Bhishma did not want to fight on behalf of this insolent prince, but more than that, it stung because it was against the Kshatriya honor. He was fighting wholeheartedly, and to tell a Kshatriya that you are not fighting wholeheartedly, you know, it is just like in sports, sometimes there is match fixing. You know, one team wants to win a match, or one team is, some players are paid so that they underperform on certain days so that the opponent team wins. So here Duryodhana was asking, was charging Bhishma similarly, and it was a slur on his character, and he just couldn't tolerate it, slur on his character. And as he couldn't tolerate it, Bhishma said, oh prince, why are you piercing with words like this? Can't you see that I as well as all the warriors are exerting ourselves fully to the best of our capacity to serve your interests? We are all ready to lay down our lives for you. What more do you think that son of a Suta can do? Bhishma turned away and trying to control his anger. And then, still the words of Duryodhana stung in his heart, and he said, as per my vow, I have been grinding the Kaurava Pandava forces relentlessly. But listen, as I take a vow for your sake tomorrow, he said. He sat down in meditation. Before that, he took out 5 frightening looking fierce arrows and placed them on a cloth in front of him, looked at them, closed his eyes and went into meditation. And he chanted some sacred mantras, he infused them with great power. And when he opened his eyes, he said, I have invested all my life's mystic power in these arrows. And these 5 arrows will kill the 5 Pandavas. Actually, at the start of the war, Bhishma had said that he would fight, but he would not kill the Pandavas. Because they are, he told Duryodhana, they are like you to me. So although I am fighting on your side, because they are also my grandsons, so I cannot kill them. But now, these words had incited him, he said, I will kill the 5 Pandavas tomorrow with these 5 arrows. Duryodhana's heart filled with joy at the thought, oh yes, tomorrow the war will end. If the grandsire takes a vow, he will keep it. He knew about how strong Bhishma was in keeping his word. His vow of lifelong celibacy itself was an example of his strong vows. So he felt delighted. And he told, wonderful. And he thought about it. He said, please give me the arrows. I'll keep them very safely with me. And I'll give them to you tomorrow. He thought nothing should go wrong. This is the way, tomorrow the war will be over. Tomorrow the kingdom will be mine. So I'll keep the arrows. So he ensured that nobody would come to know about the arrows. So that no spies would come about and would convey the message. And nothing could be done. No conspiracy could be hatched to take the arrows away. But although he tried all this, there's one person who knows everything without needing a spy, and that is Krishna. So Krishna told Arjuna that day, we'll discuss this pastime later when we talk about the Arjuna and Duryodhana, and when we come in later more in detail. But suffice it to say that he told Arjuna, you go and get those arrows. So long ago Arjuna had helped Duryodhana when Duryodhana had been overcome by the Gandharvas. And that's why, at that time Duryodhana had said that I will do some favor for you in future, because you had done this favor for me. So now Krishna told Arjuna, you go and ask for these 5 arrows. And Arjuna accordingly went and asked for the 5 arrows, and Duryodhana, being bound by his word of honor, gave the arrows. And he told him, just tell me Arjuna, how did you come to know about these arrows? Arjuna smiled and said, Krishna told me. Duryodhana punched his fist on his mom. Krishna, Krishna, how did he come to know? It seems maybe he's God. Maybe he's God. But his anger was so great, he said, no, we have to keep fighting. And then the next morning, when they got ready for the war, And then Bhishma asked Duryodhana for the arrows. So Duryodhana became red-faced and he told what had happened. And Bhishma smiled. And Bhishma knew that Krishna would always surely have done something to protect his devotees. In fact, when Bhishma took that vow, also invested the arrows with that tremendous power, at that time also he had no intention actually of killing the Pandavas. And he did that so that Krishna would demonstrate, do something wonderful by which he would demonstrate how he protects his devotees. That was the heart of Bhishma. And he could see what was going on in Duryodhana's head. Duryodhana's head, or fertile head, was coming up with the idea. So even if those five arrows are gone, you can invest similar other five arrows with the same power and you can carry out your vow of killing the Pandavas. So Bhishma, intuiting this, said, I had put almost all of my life's power in those five arrows and I cannot do that again. Actually, when a person practices dharma, or does practicing any kind of dharma involves doing some amount of austerity. And when a person does austerity, that practice of austerity gives power to a person, great power. And that power enables the person to do extraordinary things, things which other people can't do. That is called as tapobal. Now, we can understand this at a simpler level when we say that, actually say a person does a lot of exercise, then by that exercise the person will develop strong muscles. So that is at one level of discipline and austerity that leads to the development of certain powers. So at a deeper level, when a person does austerity, austerity is the means by which one, austerity especially in the adherence of dharma, is the mean by which one connects with the higher powers of the universe. And the higher powers are available to those who do austerity and practice dharma. Just like there are in science, there are mechanisms by which, say, some other powers which are not accessible to normal people can be tapped, say, through technology. We have hydroelectric power, we have nuclear power, we have thermal power. So these are means by which certain powers can be tapped. So just as there are higher powers in the cosmos which need specialized mechanisms to tap. Now, our civilization uses technology to tap these powers. There's another kind of technology which involved the development of individual powers through the performance of austerity and through the adherence of dharma. So adherence to dharma. So Bhishma, because he had practiced dharma diligently and because he had been a celibate throughout his life, he had acquired a lot of tapobala. And that's how he had invested that in the arrows. So he said, I cannot do it again now. But he said, still, I will do my very best. And by the end of today, Arjuna will be killed unless Krishna does something to intervene and protect. And because Krishna has decided not to raise weapons, so your purpose will be served. So again, Duryodhana felt relieved, again almost delighted. Arjuna was the most formidable warrior on the side of the Pandavas. If he could be killed, then the war would be almost as if won. They could overcome the other warriors. He said, I will overcome Bhima. And again the war started in dead earnest. And on this day, Bhishma fought so furiously, like he had never fought before. And he fought in such a way that nobody could stand before him. Going before him was like going into the jaws of death. And the Pandava soldiers just broke in fear and fled. And at that time Krishna told Arjuna, you have to fight with Bhishma. You had given your word at the start of the war that you will put aside affection towards Bhishma and fight him wholeheartedly. Why have you put aside that? Now fight. So Arjuna said, fie upon the duty of a Kshatriya, that this duty makes a Kshatriya fight against those whom he should be bowing down to. Yes, but it is my duty and I will fight. And Krishna took the chariot towards Bhishma, and Arjuna and Bhishma fought fiercely. But Arjuna could not put his heart into the fight. And he fought and fought, but Bhishma was fighting so ferociously. Now Bhishma was fighting ferociously, not just because he was angry. Yes, Duryodhana's word had hurt him, they had angered him. But that was not the primary motive. Actually, he wanted in his heart to see Krishna performs a wonderful pastime, to see how Krishna will demonstrate the truth that I will protect my devotees. Kante pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. It declares in the Bhagavad Gita. And that not just in Bhagavad Gita, there's an eternal principle that the Lord always protects those who are devoted to him. So how he will protect that? That's what Krishna, that's what he wanted to see. And as Arjuna tried to counter half-heartedly, Arjuna, even at his best, would not have found it easy to overpower Bhishma. But when Arjuna was fighting whole half-heartedly, there was no chance of him ever being able to overpower Bhishma. And Bhishma, even while fighting with Arjuna, was shooting arrows so fiercely that he was devastating and destroying the troops around Arjuna also. And Krishna became grave. He said, the way Bhishma was fighting, the war would end that day itself. So Arjuna was already wounded with arrows in his body, although he had a very strong armor. But still, even that armor could not withstand weapons for all time. It would also eventually be penetrated. He said, the way Bhishma is going, all our army will be destroyed today. The way the war is going, Arjuna himself will be killed soon. I cannot allow that. And I will have to take things in my own hands. I will have to protect Arjuna. So Krishna was having the chariot reins in one hand, the stick, the whip in the other hand, and suddenly he flung both of them and he leapt off the chariot and he looked and he saw there was a wheel and he took that wheel and he just charged towards Bhishma and started running towards Bhishma. And as he was running in this way, everybody was stunned to see this. Bhishma, seeing that Krishna, who had taken a vow not to lift up his weapon, that Krishna had suddenly lifted up a weapon to protect his devotees, had come to the same cause of protecting his devotees. He was amazed, his heart flooded with joy, and he put aside his bow and he says, come, O Keshava, death at your heart will be the perfection, that your hands will be the perfection of my life. So Bhishma's attitude was devotional, seeing the Lord coming. But as we see Krishna, as we see over here, Krishna is charging towards Bhishma. And actually, when the mace fight happens, the two warriors are close to each other. But when the fight happens with bows and arrows, they are at a significant distance from each other. So Bhishma and Arjuna were quite a distance away from each other. Krishna jumped off the chariot, picked up the wheel, and started charging towards. And this vision of Krishna charging towards him became etched permanently in the heart of Bhishma. And he recollects this later when he is about to depart. Prasabam abhisasar madvadhartum. Prasabam abhisasar harihu hantum ibham gatottariya. So he says, harihu hantum ibham. Just as a lion comes to kill an elephant, Hari charged towards me. And gatottariya. His upper cloth flew away and fell away. And Krishna looked magnificent, holding up the chakra. Now, there were many warriors who had died, and there were many weapons over there. Krishna just picked up the chakra. Because the chakra is similar to his Sudarshan chakra. Now, Krishna could have called his Sudarshan chakra, but he was so frantic with anxiety that he just didn't think about it. Just took the chakra and charged. He would induce all his bodily prowess in that chakra and throw it. Now when earlier Krishna used the Sudarshan chakra, say for example, he decided to kill Sudarshan, he did Shishupal. At that time, he did not charge towards Shishupal. Wherever it was, he was just discharged the Sudarshan chakra, and the Sudarshan chakra went and cut off the head of Shishupal. So here, Krishna could have done the same thing. From that distance only, he could have hurled the chakra with all his formidable prowess. But he charged because Krishna was so filled with anxiety for Arjuna's protection, that he thought that he cannot take any chance. Sometimes when one person has to shoot another person, and if we are shooting from a distance, then there might be a chance that one miss the target. So you go close and then shoot point blank, then there is no chance of missing because the person is right in front. So like that, Krishna charged across to throw the wheel point blank and to ensure that there would be no missing and Bhishma would be killed and his devotee Arjuna would be protected. So as Krishna was charging along like this, Arjuna seeing this became mortified. He said, no, how can Krishna break his word like this? I am to blame for this. He leapt off the chariot and he started running after Krishna. Krishna, please don't use your weapons. Please don't give up your word for our sake. I promise you, I will fight wholeheartedly. I will kill Bhishma. Please don't break your word. You will be disgraced in the whole world. Please don't do this for my sake. Arjuna was running towards Krishna, calling out to him. But Krishna was so blinded with, so deafened by anxiety, concern, love for his devotee that Krishna did not hear anything. And finally, Arjuna ran and leapt through the air and just fell at the feet of Krishna and he caught him by his leg, by his thigh and tried to hold him back. But Krishna was filled with so much anxiety that Krishna still kept running. And although Arjuna was there holding him back, but he dragged Arjuna across the battlefield for a considerable distance. And Arjuna was calling out to Krishna to stop, but Krishna was not ready to listen. Finally, Arjuna, whose feet were being dragged along the ground, Arjuna lifted his powerful feet high up and banged them on the ground. As he banged them on the ground, holes were created. And because he was being dragged along, almost something like trenches were being created. But as his legs went inside the ground, the legs got a foothold. And with the strength of his hands, which were pulling on to Krishna's legs, and with the strength of his legs, which were in the ground, Arjuna finally brought Krishna to a stop, and Arjuna called out to Krishna, please stop, stop. So as Krishna was charging towards Arjuna all this time, his attention was completely focused on Bhishma, and he told Bhishma that you are the cause of this whole war and the destruction. He said, it is a duty of the minister to give good counsel to the king. And if the king goes on an evil track, then the minister must take the responsibility to bring the king back on the right track. Because you fail in your duty, that is why you deserve to die. So Krishna was speaking this as he was charging across and Arjuna was trying to stop him. And Bhishma, putting aside his weapon, he says, oh Keshava, what you say is always right. He says, I tried my best to give good counsel to Dhritarashtra, but he was not ready to listen. What could I do? I failed in my duty as a minister and I am ready to fear the consequences. Death at your hands will be perfection for me. And as he was charging towards Krishna in this way, Arjuna pulled him down. Finally stopped. Arjuna said, Krishna, please stop. I will fight and kill Bhishma. You don't have to break your vow of not lifting weapons. Hearing this, Arjuna, Krishna calmed down. And then Krishna and Arjuna turned around and walked back. This happened towards the end of the day. The sun was almost setting. And Bhishma, who had put aside his weapon, looked around as if coming out of a trance. And he signaled to his warriors to cease the hostilities for the day. At that time, the hostilities would be, war would fight from morning to evening, and then the war would stop. So the war stopped, and as everyone went back, everybody was thinking of this most dramatic incident that had happened on that day. How Krishna had come to the help of Arjuna by lifting up Asura Chakra, and how he had charged towards Bhishma. For Bhishma, it was the highest point of his life. The most cherished vision of his life was going to stay forever in his heart. So he remembered how. So Bhishma actually served Krishna in Viryaras. There are, in the spiritual world, there are the specialities, the variety and the sweetness and the intensity of the emotions with which the devotees and the Lord reciprocate. So There are five primary rasas. These are related with the five primary ways in which we see, have relationships in this world also. Actually, whatever relationship we see in this world, they are like the reflections, the Xerox copies of what is originally there in the spiritual world. There is Shantaras, where there is passive admiration. One thinks, oh, the Lord is great. Like people have fans. From the distance, they, oh, how great this player is, how great this performer is. That's Shantaras. Then there is Dasyaras, where one actively serves the Lord and does something for him. So, for example, Hanuman is in Dasyaras. Then there is Sakhyaras. It's friendship. So, Arjuna is in Sakhyaras. So, eternally, Arjuna serves Krishna as a friend. So, there are sages who are in Shantaras. There are Chitra Krakta, Krishna's assistants who are there in Shantaras. They serve him. Then they are in Dasyaras. There are the trees in the spiritual world. And there are sages who passively meditate on the Supreme Lord. They are considered in Shantaras. Then there is Shanta, Dasya, Sakhya. Then there is Vatsalya, parental role, where some devotees serve the Lord as parents. There is Yashoda Mai, Nanda Maharaj, like that. And there is Madhurya Ras, where the devotees serve the Lord as his consort. Radharani, Sita Devi, Lakshmi Devi. So these are the five primary ways in which there are relationships. But along with these five modes of relationships, there are seven other ways, seven other emotions which add flavor to these relationships. And one of them is Virya, chivalry. So, Virya Ras means sometimes when the Lord wants to fight. Now, in all these relationships, the devotees love the Lord. So, normally they will not want to fight with him. But when the Lord wants to fight, then sometimes some devotee takes up that role. So, when Krishna wants to fight in the spiritual world, then some of the gopas, they wrestle with him. So, Sridhama wrestles with him. And sometimes Krishna lets himself get defeated. So, why does he let himself get defeated? Just to enhance the sweetness of the relationship. Just to intensify the flavor of that relationship. And in this way, the devotees relish greater and greater joy. And that is the sweetness of bhakti. So, this is Virya Ras. In fact, in the Gopal Champu, which is a book about Krishna Lila described by Jiva Goswami, he expands using various other scriptures, the pastime that about Krishna that described in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he says that that same Krishna in the assembly of Kamsa, who easily defeated all the world champion wrestlers, Mushtika, Chanur, and all these other wrestlers he defeated, in that same arena, then after all the wrestlers were defeated, Krishna called his Gopa friends to fight with him. And as they were fighting, these Gopa friends, who were just simple cowherd boys, they defeated Krishna. And Kamsa was completely bewildered, unable to understand what is happening. He said, my wrestlers whom nobody could defeat, they were defeated by Krishna, and then these cowherd boys are defeating Krishna. What is happening? So this is actually Krishna enjoying Virya Rasa. He lets himself be defeated also. So the spiritual world is not a place, it is not a place where God always delights in boasting his or displaying his godhood. I am God, bow down to me. No. God often subordinates, even conceals his godhood so that love can reign supreme. So that the sweetness of love can manifest more and more. And whatever is appropriate for the enhancement of the reciprocation of love, that emotion and the appropriate mood and everything required for that is manifested. Spiritual world is a world of love. That means whatever is required for the intensification of that love is manifested over there. So in that wonderful spiritual world and in the spiritual relationships, one of the ways is Virya Ras. So Krishna's body is Sat Chit Ananda. It is spiritual. It has got nothing to do with material things. So Krishna's body doesn't have to give out material stuff like our body gives out. It is not made of flesh and bones. But still, when there is this leela to be performed, at that time Krishna lets his body also give out blood. Because so when Bhishma was shooting arrows, Bhishma describes how Krishna, when he was a charioteer of Arjuna, Sheet Vishikhata Vishirna Damshaha Shatach Pariplutta Tataino Me Prasabham Abhisasar Madhvadhartum Bhautume Bhagavan Gatir Mukunda Sheet Vishikhata Vishirna Damshaha. So he says, by my arrows, what had happened? Krishna's Krishna had become pierced. So his forehead was adorned, he says, by blood. Normally, when we see blood on somebody's body, he says, hey, what happened? We want to treat it, apply some ointment to it, remove that blood. We don't think blood is beautifying the body. And then he says, on there was the dust of the clouds, dust which had been raised by the hooves of the horses. Krishna was very close to the horses. And anyway, there were so many horses, and there were other animals were also there, elephants also. And they were raising up dust, and the dust had also decorated Krishna's body. Normally, dust is not considered decoration, but dust was a decoration here. Then blood was a decoration, and sweat was also there. So normally, these three can make a person not look attractive. But in Krishna's case, all of them made him look attractive. Why? They enhanced his beauty. How did they enhance? Because in Virya Rasa, the devotee and the Lord reciprocate the mellow emotion of fighting with each other. So although Krishna was not actively fighting, but Krishna was having Bhishma play the role of an antagonist, of an opponent who fought against him and his devotees. Krishna had chosen a passive role, advisory role over there, not exactly passive role. Passive from the fighting point of view, but still he was active in giving counsel. And here he was enjoying Virya Rasa. So he enjoys when a devotee hits him also, just like when a child and a father are fighting. The child just punches the father. The child's blows are actually harmless, but the father gets a joy. The child may punch and the father repeat, oh, I'm defeated. And a child starts jumping in joy. So there's a reciprocation of love that happens over there. So for the sake of reciprocating love, the Lord and the devotee take different moods. And here Krishna took the mood of a warrior. Bhishma has already taken the mood of a warrior. And Bhishma, no devotee delights in hurting the Lord. All the devotees want to serve the Lord. But service can happen in various ways. And in some cases, the devotee may serve the Lord by fighting against the Lord. That is Virya Rasa. And as a Bhishma, he's cherishing that image as one of the heart's fondest images when he's about to depart from the world. And that's this. What happened on this day was very, very special. So it's not just the idea of two warriors fighting or one warrior giving up a word of honor because of expediency. No, it is the highest level of love that is being demonstrated through this pastime. That the Lord, who becomes a servant of his devotee by becoming a charioteer, and the Lord who sacrifices his own word of honor so that he can protect the life of his devotee, and the Lord who delights in reciprocating variety of emotions, and including the emotion of becoming having a devotee serve him in an antagonist role. So all these extraordinary facets of divinity are revealed in this pastime. And this particular pastime is one of the most cherished pastimes in the Mahabharata in terms of demonstrating the beauty of the conception of God and the beauty of the nature of the pastimes between the Lord and his devotees. So, normally a devotee would like to garland the Lord, and that's how the devotee honors the Lord. But the essential principle of service is doing whatever will please the Lord. So when Bhishma was shooting arrows, you know, it was his way of doing service. And from Krishna's point of view, although the arrows were thudding in his body also, so he felt those arrows to be non-different from garlands being offered to him, flowers being showered upon him. Because he saw beyond the immediate circumstances of two warriors fighting with each other. He saw this was his devotee reciprocating love with him. And that's how Bhishma saw, and that's how he describes in these prayers. So, a great Vaishnava Acharya, a great scholar, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes, and in general this is the way we understand that, you know, when two people are in love, in the heat of passion, sometimes by loving each other they may bite each other. So then now those love bites, normally if one person bites another person, that will be considered an act of savagery. But love bites are an expression of beauty. Of course, the relationship between the Lord and the devotee is not at all material or self-centered or body-based. It is transcendental, it is pure, it is selfless. At the same time, we get some understanding of that relationship, especially its intensity. Not exactly its nature, but its intensity we can understand by comparing it to the relationship in this world. And so, the wounds that adorn Krishna's body, they are like a love bite. So love can take many forms. Love between the Lord and the devotee is not just a devotee going to the temple and folding hands, or devotee going, a worshipper going to a mosque or a church or a synagogue and doing some worship. The Vedic wisdom tradition reveals how God is such an extraordinary person and how love can, to him can be offered in so many different and wonderful ways. And one of the ways is by offering him metaphorical love bites, by shooting arrows at him. And that's how this is beautiful vision of love of a loving God. And this is the vision of a loving God that can charm our heart. And this is the ultimate revelation of the Mahabharata. The Bhagavad Gita's wisdom points towards this loving God, and the Mahabharata also points towards this loving God. And this vision is more developed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and is further developed in the commentaries in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and in the Bhakti traditions, which explain the secrets of the Srimad Bhagavatam by further revelations through the saints. And this is the treasure that the Mahabharata ultimately offers us. What happened on the 10th day of the Mahabharata war? We'll discuss in our next class. Thank you.